Hello there, this is the North by Northwest podcast for Sunday the 31st of October for Halloween. In the treat category, authors, a couple of authors on the show, and one group of authors who wrote the book Women of Pender Harbor, their voices, their history, a real tribute to the women who shaped that community. We're going to start with the book about the women of Pender Harbor, their voices, their history. And in studio, I had Dorothy Faulkner, Elaine Park, and Kathy Jenks. I had a chance to see this book for the first time when I was on the Sunshine Coast this summer for the Sunshine Coast Festival of the Written Arts. And it's a beautiful book. It's a big book, a big hardcover book, filled with anecdotes from women from Pender Harbor and filled with wonderful historical photographs of the area as well. If you've never been to Pender Harbor or don't know where it is, it's up the Sunshine Coast. You go past Gibson's and Seashelt and Davis Bay. You keep on heading up the Sunshine Coast and then you come to the three communities that make up Pender Harbor. And when I was talking with Dorothy and Elaine and with Kathy, I started by asking them about what they discovered as they were researching way, way back to the early days of Pender Harbor. They went back to pre-settlement days when the population there was actually as high sometimes as 20,000. These days it's about 2,500. Anyway, sort of I looked at the cover of this book, which tells a lot about the history right away. It shows a picture of a steamship, Lady Cecilia, pulling up to a dock, and I asked them to talk about that.
In the early days of Pender Harbor, boat day was the biggest day in the week. And even if you had nobody coming in on the boat and nobody going out on the boat from your family, you tended to go down and meet the boat and just watch to see who did come off and what did come off, because all the food that might have been ordered was coming off, and sometimes there were horses being shipped up, and sometimes there were people who were injured out in the woods in the logging camps waiting to be shipped down to Vancouver to the hospital. It was where everything happened. Life and death was on the dock.
And it was, what, once a week?
It varied. The Union steamships weren't known for keeping to a rigid schedule. Hey, Kathy? Kathy did a little bit of research into the Union steamships.
Yeah, some poor people used to go down there waiting for their loved ones to come back from the city, and they'd end up waiting 12 hours because the boat just didn't show up. It was running really late.
That is very late, 12
very
hours.
Late.
Tell me, Dorothy, how this project began to end up with this wonderful book, Women of Pender Harbor, Their Voices, Their History.
Well, in 2001, a series of programs were presented at one of the Women's Connections group gathering, and the program was asking local women to come to tell their story. And we decided to do something to honor the women of Pender Harbor who had pioneered and created the community it is today. So we had heard so many of the men's stories over the years, whether it was logging or fishing stories, and there wasn't much on what the women were doing when the men were away. They were totally dependent on the water.
Yeah.
And they all had their kicker boats. Some, you know, no matter what weather it was, they had to go to pick their children up from school or go to over to Irving's Landing to meet the steamship boat for their supplies. And if they had a breakdown, I mean, they were out there.
So often in the transcripts, the women said, oh, you don't want to hear about that, or, oh, that's ordinary. And what I was seeing was outstanding heroism and creativity and courage in the face of environmental pressures and personal pressures. So it was a very moving experience, and it seemed to me that the story wasn't just a story of Pender Harbor, it was a Canadian story.
I guess it just made me realize, you know, when you compare your life today and you look at how these women lived, it really put it into perspective. These women came to Pender Harbor in open boats on the open ocean with all their prized possessions and, you know, their husband and their six kids and a dog and cat. And before they get out of the Fraser River, the canoe, which is carrying all their prized possessions, overturned. And they get to Pender Harbor and live in a tent or a little hut, and again, no running water, none of the conveniences, and we just take so much for granted nowadays.
Yes.
Yeah.
I was surprised by some of the stories that the women told about going north on the fish boats in the 30s and the 40s because they got on to these little boats with their babies. And the boats weren't large. They were wooden boats, by and large. And sometimes they would have a house towed north as they followed the fish. And I remember being struck when we went to interview Diane Goff, who said, yes, the house that I grew up in, it's still perched up there on Francis Penn. She said, that house has been all the way to Clem Two and back. I found that an amazing statement, and that house is still there. You know, the relationship to the water that Dorothy mentioned is what struck me.
You're listening to Dorothy Faulkner, Elaine Park, and Kathy Jenks, and they're talking about a book that they worked on, along with Pat Job, Maureen Wright, and Karen Dick, and others, called Women of Pender Harbor, Their Voices, Their History. While they were in the studio, I asked them each to read a selection from the book.
Well, I selected one which talks about a lady by the name of Vi Tyner, who came up to Pender Harbor with her husband. They came up from New Westminster, and they had the same problem with a loaded canoe that overturned before they got out of the Fraser River. But once they got here, they, of course, faced the challenge of building. And this is a little snippet from Vi Tyner. We started with just a couch, a card table, and a little stove. I made a chair. We took a year just to get the place fixed up. We lived in a small tent and had to hurry to build a shelter before winter. We were not alone in tent living. All over the district, the forests were giving way to little cleared places, each with its tent and pile of lumber where people were about to build. Wilf Scott had the trucking business, and he brought the materials from Half Moon Bay to Pender Harbor. He left them halfway up the lane. I had to carry all the boards one by one because Jim couldn't, as he had polio. We worked on building our home, got the roof on, and moved in. It was rough and only two rooms, but it was like heaven. Later, when we made one of our boat trips to Irvine's Landing, we found an old door floating in the water. We took the door along home and hung it. It didn't fit. A burlap bag stuffed in front of it kept the draft out. The first winter in our home really tried us. The lake froze until the ice was 10 inches thick. The burlap bag in front of the door kept blowing out. Sometimes one of us got sick and would have to stay in bed. The other went on sawing firewood because the weather was so cold that if the wood cutting stopped, the one in bed would likely perish. At night, when the fire went out, the water in a glass froze.
Very, very vivid, isn't it?
Very vivid, yeah.
Winter doesn't hit like that anymore.
It doesn't.
In Pender Harbor.
And often these women are describing some of the frozen passageways up there in Pender Harbor. Yeah, different times.
10 inches thick.
Yeah.
Elaine, did you have something that you wanted to read?
We had a family in the harbor, the Warnocks. And two of the girls from that family, Cledia and Luella, both married brothers and became Cledia Duncan and Luella Duncan. And they described what it was like growing up in Pender Harbor during the Depression. Luella Duncan, it was tough. I and most of the other young people of the harbor from that time remember having no butter. So we had lard and salt and pepper on our bread. But we never went without a meal. I remember a very, very sad Christmas we had. I guess Dad must have been down to nothing. We had two big rooms upstairs, four boys in one and four girls in the other, and my mother and Dad were down in their bedroom downstairs. I remember hearing Mother cry most of the night. It was near Christmas time, and they were wondering what to do. So my Dad, he walked down to the Indian Island Marina where Mr. Pope ran a store. That was 2 miles, anyway, from Bargain Harbor to way out there. And he asked Mr. Pope if he could get some little things for his children. The girls, we got a comb, and the boys got, I think, a pocket knife. But we had a great big hindquarter deer roast for dinner. And Mother always made those plum puddings that you put in a sack with lots of currants. And Mother made this beautiful nutmeg sauce, and we had Christmas. It was very hard for Mother and Dad. They were scrimping and saving, and we used to get clothing from missionaries. When old Reverend George Pringle came up here in a boat and had a service in the school and baptized a Presbyterian family all in one fell swoop, he brought missionary boxes. So I remember we'd get a box of clothes and shoes, and it really was a big help. It was tough for us, but it was worse on others. Some others in the harbor, they thought we were rich. They were so poor.
That, at the end, is quite like, it makes you just sit back, doesn't it? The others thought we were rich. They were so poor.
Yeah. And then her sister said that one of the ways that their dad kept the family alive was to kind of close his eyes to the government fish and game regulations. And she said, when we were still at home, Dad used to seine herring and sell them to the halibut boats. You weren't allowed to interfere with them out of season, but he did. He had to live. We lived on fish and deer meat, the garden and the chickens. He did get reported once for shooting deer out of season. When the police came, Dad said, "You can put me in jail if you want to." Then he invited them to stay for supper, and he said, "We're having deer."
I loved reading these anecdotes because the voices of those women, mm-hmm. It's so great to hear the specifics about those experiences. Dorothy, did you find something there that you'd like to read?
Well, I'd like to read a piece that Pixie Daly contributed, her memories of when the opening of Lloyd's store in 1947. This Lloyd's store is now currently John Henry's store. Up to that point, you went to the counter and gave your order, and this was going to be the first self-served store.
Imagine.
In the area, and maybe in a lot of B.C., because Al Lloyd had worked for Woodward's at one time, and he had this vision. Pixie Daly describes Al Lloyd's. When Lloyd's store was built, the residents of Garden Bay, Hospital Bay, and Sinclair Bay were delighted to have access to a store without the hassle of loading small children and grocery boxes into a kicker. We used to have to chug over to Irving's Landing store, a Royal Murdoch store, both situated at the entrance to Pender Harbor. Boating to the store was a good mile or so and painfully slow with our Briggs and Stratton's inboard motors. On the opening day of Lloyd's store, the residents pushed past the newly carved totem pole built by the Garden Bay Works that stood as a sentinel by the door and proceeded to indulge in a great spending spree. The inside of the building was filled with unbelievable conglomeration of foodstuffs, gas lamps, boat fittings, coils of rope, camp stoves, gumboots, swimsuits, Mackinaws, plaid shirts, stationery, pens, pencils, and of course comic books.
And of course we've got some pictures in the book of the customers arriving, and they're arriving by boat.
How did working on this and reading these stories and hearing these stories change your, as relative newcomers, compared to many of the people in the pages of this book, how did it change your feelings about the place that you call home now, about Pender Harbor?
The further we go into this project after the book, the almost better it becomes, because you start to see the camaraderie between these women, you know, when they were able to come to our special celebration launch. It was so touching because it's almost like we had a glimpse of what their lives were like way back when. They were very close, and the whole project is invigorating because the feedback within the community is so positive. You know, one person says it's like reading this book is like going to a gourmet restaurant. Every time I turn the page, there's another dish to savor.
That's great, yes.
After all the hard work that's been put into this by so many volunteers and so many people, it's just nice to know that people are taking an interest in their history, and I'm very proud to be a part of it.
I feel that I belong, and I really have a real sense of community. I think what strikes me the most is that there's so many newcomers that have taken part in this and taken pride in coming to Pender Harbor and wanting to know the history behind the place that they live.
Well, my husband says that we can't go anywhere now without a story from me. Oh, that's where this happened, or that's where that happened.
You've become like the tour guide.
Well, you know, everything has a meaning now because you know what happened there once. And it just really deepens every day for me, because even as you walk somewhere, you're mentally imagining what it was like for the women whose voices resonate through this book. And you feel you're not walking alone.
And I love how it started out as one thing and has now grown into something so much bigger.
So much bigger.
Thanks again so much, all of you, and congratulations.
Thank you, Cheryl.
Thanks, Cheryl.
Thanks, Cheryl.